Welcome back to Blotter Briefs, Teehee Briefs, my possibly ill-advised attempt to chop through some of the true crime backlog on my pages-long to-do list. And since we're contemplating an Australian property today, barristers in my chambers for... The Teacher's Pet. The Crime from the podcast's website. A star footballer, his schoolgirl lover, a wife who vanishes. Chris and Lynn appear to have the perfect marriage, but when Lynn goes missing, dark secrets are buried. This is no fairy tale, but a sordid story of strangely close twin brothers, teenage student lovers, and probable murder. The story. Lynn Dawson went missing early in 1982, and while it seems obvious in retrospect that her husband Chris was involved, prior to Lynn's disappearance, he'd been insisting his teenage girlfriend move in with the family, ostensibly as a babysitter, but come on. 2 days after Lynn's disappearance, the girlfriend did move in, and Chris and Lynn's small children began calling her Mom. Chris was never charged with Lynn's murder or even arrested. Occam's Razor suggests, and host/pod creator Hedley Thomas repeatedly underlines, that it's extremely unlikely Lynn walked out of her own life, or that anything other than a carefully planned murder and disposal of Lynn's body in the relentlessly thick bush near the Dawson home is what could have become of her. But Thomas set out to find out in The Teacher's Pet, which debuted in May of this year and whose latest episode's title makes it a dicey proposition as to whether I'm going to make time to listen to the rest of it instead of just Googling around to find out how the story overtook itself, shall we say, in the last few weeks. I did listen to the premiere episode, however, as the podcast had been sitting on my to-listen list for a while, and then last week Twitter tipster Carrie asked if I planned to review it, noting that it's doing serial-sized download business down under. And I can see why. If I hadn't been semi-spoiled by where Thomas's investigation ends up here in December of 2018, I'd be making my way through the summer and fall episodes for sure. Thomas picked a great story, for starters. A former footballer with an overly entwined twin relationship with his brother starts boning his underage student, then his wife disappears, then there's something with the underage student moving in and being topless watching the kids. And then that's kind of that. No one's arrested. That's it. That's plenty of luggage to unpack on its own. Thomas is also fortunate to get good interviews with friends and family, including a woman I would deem the star of the first episode, Julie Andrews, no relation. Throughout the Bayview episode, Andrews is a gift. Her decades of regret that she didn't do more, both before and after Lynn disappeared, are palpable but not oppressive. She uses some salty language, which I always enjoy, and she provides dimensional details about Lynn that give a real picture of the woman, which, when it comes to these narratives, is easier said than done. The victims, taken from their families too soon, are understandably but promptly reduced by the constraints of many program formats to flat cardboard saints, great moms who loved laughing and Christmas, like that sets them apart from anyone. Julie Andrews tells about the giant bowl of costume jewelry Lynn kept around for dress-ups, and she describes a real person, not the poreless angel that you usually hear about. No offense, poreless angels, you know what I mean. Thomas lets Andrews talk, but she doesn't meander. Here she is responding to Thomas's somewhat rhetorical question about whether anyone would, or should, give Chris Dawson the benefit of the doubt as to his version of Lynn's vanishing.
There would be some prejudice, there'd be some misrecollections, but all in all, we're solid, intelligent people who could think clearly and logically and laterally and knew the guy and knew what he wanted. He wanted Joanne. To get Joanne, he had to get rid of Lynn. And then Lynn's gone. Where's she gone? Oh, she just wandered off. Wandered off with some God botherers and never to be seen again. Didn't take anything, didn't have any money. He said she took $500. She didn't have $2 to rub together. She worked part-time and he gave her this little tiny bit of money. Again, control. She had nothing. She didn't take anything. She didn't take a pair of underpants. She didn't take any of her beautiful fiddles that she loved, and she didn't take her two children. And she would not have let go of those little hands, I can tell you.
Thomas is smart enough to get out of his own way, and Andrews is, and let interviewees do the talking. But this clip does set up one of my few complaints about the teacher's pet, to wit, the time devoted to the argument that Lynn can't have disappeared because she would never have left her children. I don't mean to pick on the teacher's pet exclusively for this or say that it's not the case. It's just the opposite. It feels to me as though we hear this trope in every story about a missing mother, and the assertion is so broad as to be a meaningless waste of time. Like, how many mothers would, if everyone's being perfectly honest, leave their littles? 1 in 100,000? 10,000? A million? It's improbable, is the point. And it's very improbable that any missing woman who has kids would have missinged herself and left the kids behind without a word to anyone again, ever. And if the subject of the story were that 1 in 10,000 or 100,000 or whatever, it's not terribly likely her loved ones will put that or their suspicions about that on Front Street for a show about that subject, is it? So unless there's a reason to dwell on the idea, and occasionally there is, i.e. Diane's mother, and there's something wrong with Aunt Diane, just say the woman wouldn't have left her kids one time, and don't spend minutes on end listing the bona fides of that statement. It's like that section in Popular Crime where Bill James quotes about a dozen true crime books talking about the dead or shark-like eyes of murderers, and then is like, guys, quit it with this. If you could spot a serial killer that easily, we'd have put them out of business centuries ago. Anyway, like I said, this isn't an annoyance unique to this podcast, but this podcast does have some pretty long episode runtimes. And when you consume as much in the genre as I do, you do start to see the same unattractive marbles of fat running through a lot of the properties. Ditto the opening graphs as Thomas's narration, which do that pathetic fallacy thing to kind of ease you into the story, this time oversubscribing the symbology of painful cicada sex. I have compassion for this kind of portentous throat clearing, but that's what it is. So, pro tip, go ahead and write that part, stand back from it and congratulate yourself, and then cut it. Thomas writes the ship quickly after that, and I don't want to make it out like the teacher's pet makes me terribly impatient. It doesn't. It has texture, and I'm interested. But I would like to hear from our Australian friends as to how big this case was visibility-wise prior to the podcast coming out in May, and how it profiles compared to similarly well-regarded on everyone's phones podcasts like Serial and In the Dark over here. And if you've been listening from the beginning, regardless of your geographic location, let me know how it shaped up for you from a storytelling standpoint before recent headlines. But I'd recommend it if you haven't tried it. Just try to keep your eyes down when you subscribe so you don't get ahead of the story like I did. The Teacher's Pet is on iTunes at Al. And the way to reach me about The Teacher's Pet and anything else you'd like me to discuss is on social media. That's Blotter Presents on Facebook and Twitter. You can also find my Patreon page at patreon.com/blotterpresents, which is where you can listen to and help choose minisodes that I don't send to Gen Pop. And P.S., a little monthly subscription to the true crime fan in your life makes a great gift and supports small business. If you'd like to advertise your small business on the main podcast or on these briefs, message me on social or find my listing on advertisecast.com. Thank you for listening to today's Blotter Brief. I'm your host, Sarah D. Bunting, and I'm always prepared to rule.